What's up, guys? Welcome to another exciting edition of Real Estate Podcast, episode 358. I'm here with Griffin.
I'm here with Trev.
And I'm here with Adam.
This week we watch Fool's Paradise.
Been the most of our lives.
It made me think of Gangster's Paradise, too.
Yeah.
Funny.
Charlie Day.
And no, what's his name? Kim Jong?
Yeah.
Just as much his movie.
Yeah.
He put almost publicists on this? That's like, why would you do that? You ruined it.
He's like, nobody's going to buy that.
It's almost like it's like the movie seemed like an Always Sunny in Philadelphia script and turned
Charlie
into a film.
Charlie Chaplin.
Yeah, right.
Did y'all notice Dennis?
Mm-mm.
At the end, whenever he comes and takes his, he's in the wheelchair and his paid interns pushed him. That guy that comes up, I'm pretty sure that was Dennis. The guy with the fucking beard and the hair, and he's like, you want a job?
Yes. Okay.
I think that was him.
Well, you saw Cricket, right?
Yeah.
And then Artemis was one of the hairdressers with his wife, you know? And then the McPull and, I can't think of what that dude's name.
The dude, yeah, business manager. I went and looked at his IMDb. The hairline gave it away.
Well,
I know that hairline.
Yeah, spotted in a crowd, you know.
So the saga of Latte Pronto.
Latte Pronto. What a name!
I loved the whole, you know, just the absurdity of Hollywood. Like
Agent
nobody,
Brody.
Nobody gave a shit as long as he was just making money, you know.
Adrian Brody's like, yeah, from the streets, man.
Yeah. Yeah. He said, I know you want to channel that right now. It's like, what?
Then riding around in that car just shooting guns out the window. It's like, dude, this dude's a fucking nut.
Well, I mean, I liked all the poking fun at just the current state of Hollywood. Mosquito Boy instead of Spider-Man. Yeah. Common played Wesley Snipes.
Dagger.
Archetype, yeah. Just all that was just really funny.
Said, I'm going to go invisible.
Yeah.
They're out there. He's out there doing karate in the middle of the street. It's like, what the fuck? No, it definitely had some moments that I laughed out loud. You know, and it was kind of, it almost went heartfelt to a degree. But it didn't fully get there for me. You know what I mean?
Like him and Kim Jong?
Yeah, yeah. About that whole, like, brotherly, you know, whatever.
It's like, it's not a porn. It's like a soft
porn. That shit was hilarious. It's like fuck erotica. That was pornography.
Yeah. He's like, oh, my God, did you show your dick? Thought he was dead.
But yeah. But, like, here's the thing. I get why the movie didn't do well.
Oh,
but that's not but that's not to say that everybody wasn't funny, though. Like, everybody was great. I think it's just, you know, these type of movies, they're not as common as they used to be. No pun intended.
And that's the thing that a lot of people in a lot of the reviews that I've read about it is like, this is Charlie Day's way of, like, kind of giving a throwback to older films, you know, films that were made in the day.
Well, it also felt very 90s, too. It had a 90s vibe to it.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like, because, and what I mean by that necessarily is not the film itself, but just, well, not the story, but, you know, the way the film was shot, just the kind of movie that it is.
Yeah.
Like, you don't really see these type of movies around, which makes me curious, because I know you guys have noticed it too, but we've had a lot of movies lately that have been these weird either critiques or love letters of Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
And we also know that our boy Tarantino is doing one as well. Now, in Tarantino we trust for sure, but makes me wonder if, you know, general audiences are going to take it in. Because, I mean, these movies, I mean, I know Tarantino's on his whole other level, and I know he's a great filmmaker, but, you know, just the type of movie that he's going for. This, I mean, I feel like it's going to sit on the shelf with stuff like this, you know, all those other type of movies about making movies, you know?
Well, I mean, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood kind of nailed it. And I, whenever I went and watched it, I'm like, I don't know if people are going to like get that. You know what I mean? Like,
it's the end.
What?
Once the end of the movie, yeah.
Oh,
my
grandfather
fucking loved that movie, dude.
Yeah.
And he hates every fucking Tarantino movie. But when it got to the end, dude, and they kill those fucking hippies, he was over there like, yeah, fuck those hippies. I was like, wait a minute now. Like,
yeah.
Well, it's like, that's like a trope that he does, though. Like, he pents up this tension the whole movie.
Like, it's my fucking movie, yeah, okay? Like,
there's violence and action throughout, for sure. But then you have that good old Sergio Leone style, like, talking's done. It's just a few minutes of just fuck you for like two, you know, for a whole scene.
You know, the critic is going to be, it's about a guy that works at like a nudie mag writing movie reviews. Yeah. So it's not like, you know, it's still going to be kind of gritty. And he was going to pick that dude that was in that Richard Jewell, you know, the fat guy with curly hair.
Yeah.
So that guy couldn't do it. And then that's when the rumors, like Shane Gillis, because he kind of looks perfect. Like that guy.
Yeah. He would be.
That's been shot down, hasn't it?
Well, I mean, he denies it, but you kind of have to when you're told not to.
Yeah.
That you're going to be in a movie, right?
Yeah. But, I mean, I enjoyed this for what it was, because it's like, it's that idea of like, is it art? Is it entertainment? Is it both? Where do you draw the line at? You know, like, it kind of, to me, that's where my mind went with it, because you've got someone that has the mentality of a 5-year-old that is just being thrust into this world, you know, and it's like,
whenever he's the shot where they're watching the movie, and it's the actor he's the double for.
Mm-hmm.
He's taking that long drag on that porch. He's, dude, and it fucking traumatizes that guy. He's just flipping the fuck out in his seat trying to get away from it.
But it's like, you know, and I suppose with like Charlie Day's, you know, because out of all of the It's Always Sunny guys, the one that definitely kind of broke out a little bit more so than the rest, right?
It went a little more mainstream.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I mean, he's been in big stuff. I mean, maybe not a whole lot, but I mean, it was awesome that he got a little love being in Pacific Rim.
Yeah, Horrible Bosses, you know. But I imagine this is like, this was his interpretation, because like, he plays a fool. And he's been playing a fool for almost 20 years now, right?
Yeah.
And like, he gets together with some buddies. They come up with this, you know, interesting idea for a TV series. It actually goes somewhere. He goes to Hollywood, and it's just that whole thing of like, what is this? Do I belong here? You know what I mean? I think that that's something that everybody that isn't like brought up and grew up in the business, they all have that moment where it's like, what is this? Like, why is everybody acting weird? They're all freaking out. Like, what is going on right now? You know what I mean? So at least that was my interpretation of it. It could be more or less than that, but it's like,
it's almost like, you know, I feel like it's a weird movie to be about Hollywood, but it's hard to enjoy it. Even in its absurdity in this movie, with the fact that the current timeline, Hollywood has not got a good reputation.
Yeah.
at all.
Well, I mean, this had Ray Liotta, so who knows how long this movie had been done? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Before it dropped, before they released it. So, I mean, it could have been done for 3 years, 3 or 4 years for all we know, before they dropped it. So,
well, it's like it has the potential to be like a quotable movie, you know?
Yeah. 2018.
But it doesn't have the, whoa.
Yeah, that's when it was filmed.
So, I mean, wow. We're looking at five to six years. Yeah.
All of COVID. Like,
yep.
I guess he was just waiting.
Well, it's interesting to know that none of these people.
Cutney did all that.
Imagine the headspace these people were in when they made this movie and then the timeline played out. You know?
Yeah.
I feel like the one who probably felt the best about all of it, get like win or lose, was Charlie Day, because I mean, it's safe to assume that they probably delayed it, and then when COVID hit, he's probably like, well, fuck, there goes my chance of ever having it as a release.
Yeah.
Did he ever eat anything in the movie?
Yeah,
he tried to several times. Oh, you actually saw him eat something?
Yeah.
Oh.
I mean,
I kept seeing him try to get some food. But every time he would, like, there was all those grapes, and he was like, oh, and I was like, man.
Just tell this dude to fuck off. Go get you a grape, brother.
Well, you know, the synopsis says a fool for love becomes an accidental celebrity. And that's the only time he spoke was when he told him he loved him.
Yeah.
Well, the chick from Parks and Rec, whenever he's going to the shaman stuff or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
And she's just speaking total gibberish, like, look at the bells, listen to me. Like, and then at the end, she's like, oh, yeah, my name's not Moonshift. Make it out to, like, it's just some weird name, like Tilda or whatever.
That fucking Edie Falco playing his agent.
Yeah, right.
I mean, there were little moments that I did find myself chuckling when it happened, you know.
And like, Lex Tanner, dude.
I want to see Lex
change his clothes and put on the same clothes.
Yeah, right. He's like, which belt? And the woman's like, it's the same belt. And both. He goes, pick one.
Okay.
Yeah.
He's going to put them both on.
Yeah.
He's like, get him out of here. I got to go to the bank. She was like, go, 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 go.
Shoot.
So he was like the Fast and the Furious director.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because his movies were like something Fast Drive or.
Yeah. I enjoyed it. I didn't hate it.
When he's talking to him, he's like, I saw you and the way you break the fourth wall and you just stare at the camera. I just thought, what if you had 1,000 eyes?
Yeah.
We'll make you a mosquito.
Well, he gets to marry Kate Beckinsale. Goes to the party. They bang. She's like, I think we should get married. The dude never says anything. It's like, okay. They're adopting all these kids. Then she's like, we need some time apart.
Yeah, it's like, what? Taking the kids.
I never said anything. Then she ends up with Adrian Brody. He's like, sorry, bro.
The scene with both of them going to pick the adoption kids, I'm like, this didn't age well. Like the whole human trafficking shit.
Yeah.
It's different when rich people do it.
Yeah.
I mean, sure. All the money. What's
they
your
pay
price?
Taxes on them.
Oh, I thought it was a write off.
I didn't hate it. A lot of people did. I didn't hate it. I mean, I would watch it. Like, if I'm in a hotel, okay, and this movie's on, I'm going to watch it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like,
especially now
this,
you know where it's going.
To me, this movie would fit perfect in the 12 to 3 o'clock block of Comedy Central. middle of the day. It's a movie you stumble across while you're skipping school, man.
Yeah. I think it'll get more... I think it's going to age well.
Yeah.
That's what I think. I think people are just ready to kind of like, oh, you know, this is the guy from It's Always Sunny. Dude. And he doesn't making talk. Dance.
Well, I mean, yeah. Also, how funny was Jason Sudeikis as the director?
Well, it's like, put him and...
Lex Tanner?
Yeah, I mean, like when he's, whenever he's, there's the scene where he does, where he's out by the pool and he's like, son? And I'm sitting there thinking like, oh, he's trying to get his kid's attention. And that maid just goes out there to remove the umbrella and they're fucking done with the conversation before she can even get to him.
Yeah.
It's like, gotta take your shoes off. And he's walking around, he's like, the tiles are hot. You know, it's like... He's walking around with some shoes on. It's like, what is happening right now? Didn't hate it.
I mean, for his first movie, I mean, he got a pretty good cast.
Yeah. I mean, he's worked with all those people. So I'm sure it was just calling a favor, you know? It's like, hey, I'm making a movie. You want to be part of it? Like, Jason Bateman, just like showing up for a second. VFX, you know what I mean? Guy. It's like, bro.
I guess he's like, I thought it was going to be smaller than that. He's like, no, trust me, you'll want this. Then when he's shooting, yeah. He's like, I told you you'd like it.
Whenever he's doing the rooftop scene and he's like, so here's what we're going to do. You're going to like stand here. The goons are after you. You're cornered. And then it's going to be the first time in the movie where you sprout your wings and you fly. And he's like, you know, he's a fucking... impatient dude, so he's like, I don't want to fly. Like, he's fucking crazy, you know. Like, think about how many times he's heard that shit in a fucking psych ward. So they're telling him, and he's just like getting triggered from it. And then eventually he slips, falls, and hits that fucking station wagon, dude.
The doctor at the psych ward was like, he needs this and that, he could probably recover. He's like, the state's not gonna pay for that, so we're putting him on the first fucking bus out of here and dropping him off in the city. Yeah.
It was like, funny as hell, dude.
Yeah,
they really
did
that. Yeah, 100%.
Wild.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to give it a half star.
Same.
It wasn't terrible.
But I can't give it a star.
It's forgettable. So.
Yeah, and that's the crying shame of it, because there's so many characters in the movie that are great. Like Jason Bateman, when he comes in with that thing for the special effects, and he's like, and I swear up and down, guys, I was like, did they try to almost do a Dr. Disrespect reference there? Because he was like, he holds up the three-barreled one, and he goes, look, guys, you got your violence, your speed, and your velocity. Mm-hmm. And I was like, they have to change some words, or was that a knock at something, you know?
I mean, Dr. Disrespect reach goes beyond Hollywood at this point.
I mean,
he's only halfway up.
Mm-hmm. I mean, think about how many people that are in Hollywood that, you know, watch video game streams and shit, you know?
Yeah.
Didn't that Sweeney chick come out and say she was an Apex player?
She was bitching about smite balance. I said, bitch, get in line. You know, like, high res ain't going to balance a goddamn thing. You better figure that out right fucking now, you know?
She bitches about high res, and you're like, you sweet child. Yeah. You need to go to my channel.
Yeah. I guess if I was in Madam Web and it did that bad, I'd be bitching about Spot 2 on the internet. So, okay. You know, just saying. But, yeah, I'm going to give it a half star. I think 1.5 is appropriate, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it ain't Mama Rhodes, man.
No. We got a little bit of movie news here, though, that I'm going to dive into here. X-Files creator says Ryan Coogler has, quote, got a hard job with the reboot. Casting is a hard job. So the creator of the iconic sci-fi series, The X-Files, Chris Carter, has offered some more insight into the upcoming reboot from Black Panther director Ryan Coogler. While Carter is not involved in the project, speaking with Inverse, he has said that he cannot wait to see what someone else does with the world of The X-Files, and offers his advice regarding some of the hurdles that Coogler is likely to come across, such as casting. It's interesting, people say, aren't you possessive of it? And I say, no, I'm looking forward to seeing what somebody else does with it. Carter revealed that he has had a really nice conversation with Coogler about the X-Files reboot and thinks he has some good ideas. However, Carter does think Coogler will have some of the same difficulties that he had when first bringing the show to screens. I just asked him what his ideas were, and he told me, and I said, those sound like good ideas. No matter what, he's got a hard job. Casting is a hard job. Mounting it is a hard job. All the problems that I dealt with are going to be his problems. While no cast members for the reboot have yet been revealed, Carter has revealed that Coogler intends to bring a more diverse cast to the franchise when compared to the original show. I just spoke to a young man, Ryan Coogler, who is going to remount the X-Files with a diverse cast. So he's got his work cut out for him because we covered so much territory. One such problem that Carter had was casting Gillian Anderson as FBI Special Agent Dana Scully. During the interview, he revealed that the studio pushed back against her casting, believing that she did not have enough sex appeal. In fact, they wanted to cast blonde bombshell Pamela Anderson. Where's the sex appeal? Even though Jillian's beautiful, she wasn't their idea of sexy. First, because they didn't understand what I was trying to do with the show, and she was an unknown, so that never helps. So what do y'all think about the X-Files reboot? With the Black Panther guy. He did Creed.
Just make a new show. Why's it got to be X-Files? I mean, they could do the same kind of thing, but it could, I mean, it's a different show now.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing, like,
they should be different agents with different names.
Exactly. Why are we rebooting it? Why can't we just do a continuation? It. Yeah, exactly. Then you can bring Scully and Mulder.
She'll scold you. Scolder?
Yeah, Scolder.
But then you can bring them in. You could have all that back shit to go on. Like,
yeah.
Didn't they bring it back not too long ago for like a season?
Yeah, I was going to say, like, it's not even got anything to do with Coogler handling it or anything. It's just...
Freddy, he's all right.
The X-Files is almost a had-to-be-there type of situation now. Like, because there's so many shows that are essentially just the X-Files.
Yeah.
Yeah, Supernatural, Buffy the Vampire Slayer. You know, like we could just keep going. Like, even the CW took the same formula of...
And made, like, 20 shows.
Yeah, it's just, like, what's the monster of the week? And, you know, who's going to play, you know, who's going to be the big, you know, guest star of the week for the monster of the week. And it's like, the only way that I think that the X-Files is going to be able to be even close to successful as it was before is if they change the formatting of the show completely. They're going to have to make
if they went full cold, you know, like do a complete, like you would have to do, I feel like you'd have to do one of two things. You would have to either just continue the X-Files, find some way to write out Duchovny and Gillian and keep that continuity going for whatever it's worth, or you take advantage of the fact that while some people are aware of what X-Files is and all that, literally target, you know, the new audiences and just start from the ground up again. Have a new Mulder, a new Scully, build their dynamic, and then go with the crazy episodic shit.
I think that they're going to have to go with a more seasonal approach. I think that they're going to have to build to whatever is happening over the course of several episodes and have like...
well, cinematic, you would say.
Yeah. Because I don't know if...
like build up to something instead of having, you know... Because that was like cheap TV.
Yes.
Every week something different.
Yeah.
Like a whole season building towards something like Outer Range or...
Well, I mean, it would work, though. I mean, and with it being the X-Files, you could dabble into all that cool stuff. And especially with all the things that are out now.
Yeah.
And all of the stuff that's been, you know, brought into, you know, into the mainstream with, like, Bob Lazar's interview.
All the UAP shit.
Yeah, all that stuff, man. You could really make some really good stories out of
all that.
They have,
like, their own, like, Alex Jones-type character. They pay him a visit. How many times did they say diverse in that?
A lot.
Why?
Enough.
You know?
Because
why is that,
because
why is that the main focus?
Well, it's a big deal, dude, because the original X-Files was two white people, and now it's not going to be two white people. And that's a huge deal, dude, because, like, you know, it hasn't been that long. I think it's been, like, 2 or 3 weeks since, like, you know, anyway. But, I think that that's going to have to be the structure of, to me at least, because it's like, if we're going to do an episodic thing, like, okay, that's cool. But you're not going to have that same draw and that same need to watch, because it's like, oh, I can just tune into the X-Files anytime. Like, here was my experience watching the X-Files for the most part. On Sci-Fi after school, like from 4 to 5, they would play replays of, you know, the X-Files, and then they would show replays of the original Star Trek. So I would catch them on there. Didn't feel like I was missing anything because they were showing them out of order. Or if I missed it,
you don't have to watch them in order.
Exactly. So I think in order for them to drum up a lot of interest into it and have to retain a lot of viewership, you're going to have it be something that is going to build over time.
You would have to fit it absolutely for the binge watchers.
Yes.
Because they make that's more or less the way most stuff is taken in nowadays. Even when you have episodes that do drop weekly that get, you know, regular cable primetime airplay, and then they go to streaming the next day. And even some of the exclusive stuff, like there's some, you know, like Amazon and Hulu, they do the same, you know, shtick. There's still, you know, it's just, I guess it proves that there's really room for every type of format. But if you're going to try to do something that is already heavily saturated by its own origins.
Yeah.
Then, you know, yeah, you're going to have to, you know, not necessarily reinvent the wheel, but spice up the recipe.
Yeah. I could definitely see this going as the adult Stranger Things.
I mean, yeah. I would personally like the episodic type of things and give it more of an adult Doctor Who sense, where it's not so much, you know, sci-fi and whatnot, but it's just, you know, you have plenty of episodes where, you know, the team finds out, you know, they investigate a situation, you know, they go Scooby-Doo with it, man.
Yeah.
You know, well, they pull the mask off and debunk a lot of stuff. But you build up the seasons to, like, the things where they're like, I don't know what happened in that field. I ain't got an explanation for it. So-and-so's gone. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and leave that open-ended that there is things out there that are unexplainable, no matter how much logic and reason you apply to it. There's stuff out there that the top scientists are going to be like, don't know what the fuck that is.
Well, they can mesh.
It could make for some really suspenseful storytelling.
Well, they can mesh the two genres together because, I mean, they could still do a semi-monster of the week approach to where it's like, here's your overarching story that's happening through an entire season. And it's like, we got to go talk to this thing or this person or this whatever it is. And that could almost be an entire episode by itself where it's like, we're going to go talk to this thing that's unexplained. And maybe this person lives in this city or this town where there's these weird things that are happening. But we need this person. We need to talk to this person because of insert plot here. And it's like, you can still have your cake and eat it too on that front where you can do both. It's just, it's going to have to be cleverly written. And with the way Black Panther 2 went down, Wakanda Forever, not sure how that's going to pan out. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah, I think it's definitely going to have its hurdles.
Yeah.
But with, you know, at the end of the day, though, some of these things can write themselves. So, you know, while it's a task to maybe find stars that's going to keep you coming back, because, I mean, True Detective alone, even though it's a completely other avenue, it still builds up to a, this happened and we don't fucking really have an answer for it.
Yeah.
Solve the mystery of the murder, but the fucking how and why and circumstances, we don't want to talk about that.
And honestly, that kind of feels like more of a replacement for the X-Files anyway, right?
I mean, yeah, I think one could argue, even though it's not just in your face, you know,
sci-fi. Especially that season.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I don't know. It's interesting. I'm going to check it out, but they're going to have their work cut out for them for sure. And like you said, it's like, why can't you call it something different and just say from, you know, stories of the X-Files or, you know, whatever. I don't know.
And, and we all know too that, like, if they don't bring in the cigarette smoking man to be like, y'all ain't shit, here's why. It, like, lost opportunity.
Yeah. Well, and that's going to be Sam Jackson, right?
Y'all motherfuckers are fucking around in the wrong hangers.
Yeah. So, but yeah, Ryan Coogler, I mean, how am I feeling about this? Meh. We'll see. Like, I'm not excited, but I'm also not like hating the idea of it. It's just, it's going to take a lot. Yeah.
But I think that it's good as a, I would feel like as a, if I were a filmmaker, I would like having the expectations set low. Because that allows, you know, like, it's got to be a pressure valve for them to where, like, it lets some of that go. Like,
yeah.
Because if even if it's in a negative light, if people aren't expecting much out of it, then that gives you, like, when you win, by God, it's going to be a fucking win. And if it's a loss, then everybody kind of called it, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know. Based off of the IMDb ratings of the last couple of things that Mr. Coogler has done here, definitely has his work cut out for him to get back top.
Well, dude, those X-Files stands are going to be pretty brutal too, man.
Yeah. Oh, dude, yeah. I mean, once you factor that in,
but
nah.
Like, even Kevin Smith wouldn't touch that shit. He'd be like, I'm good.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, Ryan Coogler, diverse. Next up here, Cillian Murphy takes on union politics and murder in Blood Runs Cold. So, Cillian Murphy is set to explore the gritty world of union politics and murder in his latest project, Blood Runs Cold. The film, produced by Universal, is an adaptation of Mark A. Bradley's nonfiction book. It delves into the 1969 murder of mining union organizer Joseph Jock Yablonski and the subsequent investigation that exposed corruption within the coal industry. Murphy, fresh off his Oscar win for his portrayal of Oppenheimer and Oppenheimer, is not only starring in Blood Runs Cold, but also taking on the role of producer alongside John Davis, Jordan Davis, and Alan Maloney. The project marks another venture into the nonfiction space for Murphy, who seems drawn to stories rooted in real events and complex characters. The film's narrative centers around the tragic murder of Yablonski, who was a vocal critic of the corrupt union leadership. Yablonski's assassination, along with that of his wife and daughter, sparked the lengthy investigation that revealed the dark underbelly of the coal industry and its union politics. The story is a compelling exploration of power, greed, and the fight for justice. The screenplay for Blood Runs Cold will be adapted by the talented duo Jez Butterworth and John Henry Butterworth, known for their work on Edge of Tomorrow and Ford v. Ferrari. Their involvement promises a gripping, well-crafted script that will bring the harrowing tale to life on the big screen. This sounds pretty good.
Ford v. Ferrari was really good.
I haven't watched it yet.
Oh. Well, it's been out for like 8 years, but...
I know. I know, dude.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'll get around to it one day.
It is really good. And I'm not even a car guy. I'm just vouching for those guys. That's all.
Yeah. This is going to be kind of like Killers of the Flower Moon.
Yeah.
But instead of oil, it's going to be coal. Fossil fuels, baby. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, fossil fuels. Cillian Murphy, man. This might be his.
There will be blood.
There will be blood. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Well, it sounds like kind of.
Yeah. Excited for this. Dune 2's Austin Butler to lead Darren Aronofsky's Caught Stealing at Sony. So Austin Butler continues to build an impressive filmography of working with great directors, and his latest is no exception. It has been announced that the Oscar nominee is set to join Darren Aronofsky's latest movie. Per Variety, Butler is set to star in Aronofsky's crime thriller Caught Stealing for Sony Pictures. The studio recently landed the package, which is based on the book by Charlie Houston. The screenplay will also be written by Houston, and it's said to follow Hank Thompson, quote, a burned-out former baseball player, as he's unwittingly plunged into a wild fight for survival in the downtown criminal underworld of 90s New York City. Once the news broke about Butler's casting, Aronofsky spoke on his excitement to get the project rolling. I'm excited to be teaming up with my old friends at Sony Pictures to bring Charlie's adrenaline-soaked roller coaster ride to life. I can't wait to start working with Austin and my family of NYC filmmakers. Sounds pretty good. 90s? The seedy underbelly of the criminal New York City?
Butler's long sweeping shots of New York being a shithole. Heard.
So, yeah. So, of I'll course, watch Aronofsky. In a minute. Yeah. I mean, he did Requiem for a Dream, Black Swan, The Wrestler, and The Whale. So is this going to be a trip? Like, is, you know what I mean? Or is this going to be just a, is this going to be like Bad Lieutenant? You know what I mean? Like, just real gritty.
Bad Lieutenant.
Yeah.
Because he still talks that way. I mean, kept the voice.
He went
working for him, method. Low and slow.
Yeah. Full method, dude. So next up here, Civil War director Alex Garland is retiring from filmmaking. I'm not planning to direct again. Ex Machina Men director Alex Garland thinks that his upcoming dystopian war movie, Civil War, will be the last time he directs a project. Speaking with The Guardian, the filmmaker has said in the past that he already wants to give up directing and retreat back to writing, but while many thought the filmmaker was perhaps just having a bad day, Garland insists that he still feels the same and Civil War will be his last time calling the shots from behind the camera. Nothing's changed. I'm in a very similar state. I'm not planning to direct again in the foreseeable future. Garland has so far helmed four projects for the big screen, in Ex Machina, Annihilation, Men, and this year's Civil War, as well as devs for the small screen. Each project has largely been met with critical acclaim, with even the more divisive Men being praised for its provocative and unique storytelling. For Garland, though, he has grown frustrated with the pressure that comes from directing, and it's nothing to do with the money. Instead, he reveals that the pressure of convincing actors that eventually a giant VFX blue screen will be transformed into a war zone, or that nudity will be used respectfully, has become too much. The pressure doesn't come from the money. It comes from the fact that you're asking people to trust something that, on the face of it, doesn't look very trustworthy. Alicia and Sonoya are trusting that nudity is going to be dealt with thoughtfully and respectfully when cinema leans towards not doing that. Not only have the pressures of being at the helm become too much for Garland, the writer and director sounds like he prefers being in the shadows of filmmaking, where he doesn't have to take part in press events. He states that while he still loves film, he has fallen out of love with filmmaking, saying to the Guardian journalist, "No, I have not. I do actually love film, but filmmaking doesn't exist in a vacuum. It exists in a life and also in a broader context. I have to interact in a way without being rude like this." While it certainly sounds like Garland will now back away from directing, he is next due to co-direct the upcoming project Warfare alongside Ray Mendoza, who served as the military supervisor on Garland's Civil War. Sounds like Garland's going to let him do all the work and just be like, yep, that's right. Nope, mm-hmm. that's wrong.
Well, I mean, Garland's a better writer probably than he is a filmmaker.
Well, it must have got rough on that set. Right?
I would imagine that movie.
Because he used that as an example.
He probably had a lot of conflicting opinions.
Yeah.
I thought it was strange that that's the one, the final one he's going out on.
Yeah.
I was over here, like, had my tinfoil hat on. I was like, they made him make the movie.
Yeah, they put a gun to it
at a certain time. Like,
yeah,
what's
yeah.
he know about Civil War? He's from the UK.
Yeah. You have a Finkel on his Einhorn moment where you're like, Garland is Kubrick. Garland is Kubrick.
Eyes wide shut. He wouldn't cut out 10 minutes, so they killed him.
I mean, that movie's coming out in like 10 days.
Yeah, April. Something.
Yeah, April 12th. So I still want to watch it. Probably not going to go to the theater and watch it. I wish I would have went to the movies and watched Men. Could you imagine that ended in IMAX? But, yeah. But speaking of Alex Garland here, he talks 28 years later, confirms new trilogy is in the works. Writer-director Alex Garland has revealed how the long-awaited zombie sequel, 28 years later, finally sprang to life. The sequel to Garland and director Danny Boyle's 28 Days Later was officially announced as being in production earlier this year, with Garland revealing in an interview with The Guardian that he does now have plans for a whole trilogy. "A whole idea for a trilogy just sort of came, being into my head. It makes me really question what creativity is. I feel like an observer a lot of the time." Released in 2002, 28 Days Later was directed by Danny Boyle from a script written by Garland and stars Oscar winner Cillian Murphy in one of his first major roles. The story follows a bicycle courier who awakens from a coma to discover that there has been an outbreak of a deadly virus in London, which infects everyone and turns them into mindless killers. 28 Days Later was met with critical acclaim for its reinvention and resurrection of the zombie genre, with a sequel 28 weeks later being released in 2007. While details of what 28 years later will involve remain under wraps at present, Garland has previously teased the really cool and much bigger idea he has in mind. "I have got a really cool idea for it, but it's a much bigger movie, and one of the things about 28 Days Later is that it was small and punk, and this idea is less small and punk. But me and Danny speak about it. Every couple of years it will come up, or going, do you want to do that? And then for some reason it never happens." Will Cillian Murphy return? Big question that hangs over 28 years later is, will Cillian Murphy return? Now an Academy Award winner, thanks his stunningly understated lead performance in Christopher Nolan's Oppenheimer, Murphy has addressed the idea of coming back for the follow-up, saying, I'm available. I was talking to Danny Bull recently, and I said, Danny, we shot the movie at the end of 2000, so I think we're definitely approaching the 28 years later. But like I've always said, I'm up for it. I'd love to do it. If Alex thinks there's a script in it and Danny wants to do it, I'd love to do it. I mean, I want to watch it.
I'd like to watch 38 years later, too. We just keep making them.
Yeah, every 10 years just... we get one.
It was, you know, whenever it came out, it really did. Like, it brought the zombie shit back hard, like.
Oh, in a big way.
Yeah. Right?
I mean. Yeah. Oh, we can do this now?
Yeah.
Sheesh.
We can run, you know, fast.
Like, yeah, what do you mean? And then here comes Zack Snyder. He's like, I'm going to remake Dawn of the Dead. And they're going to be fast, boy. They're going to be moving. They're going to be moving
crack
fast.
Rock, dude.
Yeah. They got a hold of some crazy meth, dude. But yeah, 28 years later, which I like 28 days better than 28 weeks later.
Yeah.
I didn't hate 28 weeks later, but, you know, it wasn't the same.
Mm-mm.
So, but yeah, that's all the movie news. I mean, it's a light week, man. People are waiting for Deadpool to come out. Also, of course, April Fool's just happened, so it's like, what's real, what's not? I hate April Fool's so much. It's literally the worst. So.
I thought that was a joke.
What?
When it said he was going to quit filmmaking.
Oh, I did too.
Directing.
Yeah.
Because he's still going to work.
Oh, for sure, yeah. I thought it was a joke, too. I'm like, there ain't no damn way. He's making Civil War. He's predicting the end times over here. You know, like, what are we doing? But, yeah, he's like, I'm done. He might have learned too much, dude.
Well, it sounds what like if... he's tired of messing with actors.
Yeah, well.
He's like, I just
want
to write the shit. And then after that, it's.
We'll let Danny Bull deal with all that. To the Bull.
What was his name? Alfred Hitchcock called him cattle. He hated actors.
I mean,
they're always whining and shit. He's like, just do the sleeve, do the put, do the, you know. Yeah, his face is real long, like,
just do it.
He's like, look, Michael doesn't have a problem. He's still bit like a nice dad. A nice dad.
It's like, are you okay? Yes.
Yeah, I'll do it.
Yeah.
You want to read the script? No, I'll do it. I'm not going to watch it, but I'll do it.
Yeah. I'll do it.
I just thought it was interesting. Here we got Woody Woodpecker.
Yeah.
And we're not going to get the Roadrunner.
Yeah.
Movie.
Like what?
Like, I'm going to put this out.
I mean, I like Woody Woodpecker.
Sure.
But I don't like Woody Woodpecker more than Coyote and Roadrunner.
Yeah,
Roadrunner, you know what I mean?
With fucking like, no, what was his name on that man? Last Man on Earth. He had a funny name. Damn.
Tandy.
Tandy.
Yeah.
I'm a Tandy tree. That's such a funny show.
It is, man.
Good
operating for trailers, though. Yeah.
So we got. Him. overboard with the sound.
Yeah, like just from that trailer alone, I'm like, nah, I think I'm good. You know,
seen enough.
Yeah, it's enough for me. Are we doing the Monster Mash right now?
It's got a what's his name in it. He died not too long ago. I can't remember his name. The guy that cut the dude's ear off and
Michael Madsen.
Yeah.
I mean,
weird time to put this out.
Yeah.
That we. Mm-hmm. It's the Crypt Keeper.
Dude, the CGI, dude.
I can't tell if this is a comedy or not.
I don't know, dude.
I can't believe he agreed to make this movie. It's probably what killed him.
No, he owed Tarantino some money, so, yeah.
You need a fucking Monster Mash, okay?
Yeah. I got you the fucking parts, I got that fucking dude. You know what
I mean? Well, premiere in my theater.
It's like, goddamn, dude. Sleeping dogs.
Little crow talk.
Little Russell Crowe action. Joseph Wiener?
I already broke the case. It's Donnie. Bear Jew.
Oh, shit.
Is the baseball bat?
Yeah. No, it's Adam Sandler. It's the deep fake.
And he's like, baby dogs. I have to have the subtitles turned on with this one.
Yeah.
Russell Crowe's so quiet. Oh, look. It's the bat guy. The fuck's he wearing a hairnet? Doctor? I've never seen her with dark hair.
Oh, I'm kind of digging it, though. You know, like... Yeah.
It works.
Yeah. I'm kind of excited about this, right? This is Seinfeld, right?
It resurrected that dude's hairline back.
I mean...
I saw before and after. It's like, damn. Hair plugs.
What?
No ads?
No, I'm good.
Ah. You know, this guy just died. Pop-Tart guy?
Yeah.
Look at this. This looks great. The Keebler elves. That's Kennedy. That's Bill Burr as Kennedy. Wow.
We got to throw that on the pile, right?
That looks fun.
It looks so over the top, you know?
Oh, it's breakfast. Anything could happen.
Yeah. Bodkin? Bodkin? Is this a foreign?
I don't think so.
Oh, God.
Oh. Arsened. Turns out they were just bored to death.
It don't look bad.
No.
Got Tandy in it. Yeah. Scare? No.
Is that Pam Grier?
I think so.
Need a cable snake. Whoa. I bet that house smells weird.
Yeah.
You took too much. Hmm.
New season.
Looked like some damn. What's his name? Jordan Peele?
Yeah. Let's see. All right. Them anthology horror series. With varying characters and locations by season, featuring different aspects of the horror genre. So it's kind of like American Horror Story. Mm. But it doesn't look bad.
Wow, it didn't.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't look bad at all. And the first season came out April of 2021. So, I don't know what the concept of that first season was, but I guess the scare is like the tag or whatever, you know, the villain, you know, for the series, the season. So, the related shows are Swarm or movies, Castle Rock, Lovecraft Country, and Archive 81. So the first season was in the 1950s.
Oh.
It's called Covenant. Centers around a black family who moved from North Carolina to an all-white Los Angeles neighborhood during the period known as the Great Migration. The family's idyllic home becomes ground zero for where malevolent forces otherworldly threaten to taunt, ravage, and destroy them. Okay.
Sounds like a riot.
Yeah. Horde. Oh, we're doing this?
It's our boy. Marry her.
Kind of has like a young Tom Hardy thing going on. Wow.
She's trash diving. Get over here, you little Trisket. Oh, shit. Trauma, the movie.
Yeah.
Oh, horde, like order.
Order.
Ah, Joseph Quinn, though.
Yeah, I might be interested. Yeah.
I think this is the one with the. You spilled your beans, boy.
Kinds of kindness?
Yeah, it's really just a teaser.
How many different kinds of kindness are there?
I mean... Emma Stone. The dude that killed the kid in Breaking Bad.
Oh, this is from... Okay. Poor Things. Yeah.
It's turned out to be one hell of a filmmaker, huh?
Yeah. I kind of want to peep it. Is it that time?
It is.
Aaron Mania 4? This is a fourth one?
They made 5.
Okay.
Whoa.
That is all your skills? Damn. Is this Jurassic Park?
That's why I was taking the Jeep from. Is it heavy? Well, it's expensive. Put it down.
What is happening?
You gotta watch all three to know.
Bah. You're not.
Spaceman.
Ground control, the Major Tom.
I haven't watched it yet. Has anybody seen it?
Mm-mm.
I don't think it got very good reviews.
Well.
But we'll be the judge of that.
Yeah.
Apparently that Aaron Mani or whatever is like, I guess you could say it's India's version of the Haunted Mansion.
Oh.
Okay. Okay. No, I haven't watched it yet, but I'm interested to see Paul Dano as a spider.
He'll pull it off.
Yeah. And Adam Sandler as a... It's more believable that Paul Dano is a spider than Adam Sandler is an astronaut. Mm-hmm. Let's be fair here, you know? But yeah, Spaceman.
Checks on the mail.